If the promised rapprochement between the U.S. and Cuba really comes to pass, it will end an episode in a long, complicated engagement between the United States and the Caribbean nations. The islands of the Caribbean well preceded the United States as bustling European settlements and were prosperous long before the USA became a dominant economic superpower in the 20th century. But when Fidel Castro came to power in 1959, Cuba was flexing a muscle that has deep resonance in this hemisphere.
There is a limit to what the United States and self-respect can endure. That limit has now been reached. Our friendship for the Cuban people is not affected. It is my hope and my conviction that in the not-too-distant future, it will be possible for the historic friendship between us once again to find reflection in normal relations of every sort.
President Dwight Eisenhower speaking about the Castro Revolution in Cuba back in 1961. It is, in fact, normal for Cuba and the U.S. to be rivals, normal for there to be conflict and competition between the U.S. and the rest of the Caribbean nations. What is changing now in Washington and Havana goes way beyond the Cold War. Down through history, the Caribbean has been the social laboratory of the diversity of the New World, while the United States has brutally fought that diversity within its own borders. Historian Kerry Gibson is the author of Empire's Crossroads, A History of the Caribbean from Columbus to the Present Day. She says the Cuba story is one piece of a vast saga of culture and language.
The Caribbean is many things in its many worlds, and in some ways, when I was writing this book, I wasn't even sure if I should write about the Caribbean as a unit.
Right.
Are these places too unique? And I thought, what brings them together, what makes them a place, is this shared history that they have. And it's one that starts with Columbus, and it's one that's shared through today.
The amazing thing about the narrative here is that the politics of the Caribbean are so much more progressive than anything going on in North America. I mean, it's really a land of turmoil and advanced ideas and a much stronger sense of democracy and equality than even existed in the United States.
Certainly, I think that comes out of this very complicated brew of greed, looking for gold, then the sugar plantations. And then as you get into the 20th century, absolutely the countries and the nations that come out of the colonial system become, you know, very much at the forefront of ideas about democracy. You know, trade unionism is very strong, of freedom. What freedom means is, you know, an incredibly important thing in the Caribbean. And it has a very different tenor to the way we talk about freedom in the Founding Fathers here. I think, you know, when you talk about freedom and abolition in somewhere like Jamaica, it's a related conversation, but it's also a very different one.
A very different one. And who are the leaders of the abolitionist movement in a place like Jamaica, in a place like Haiti? And Haiti is really the advanced sort of leader of human rights in the Caribbean.
No, absolutely. And within Haiti, it was very interesting, too, because there are many cracks and divisions, because the revolution was a long struggle and it was very multifaceted. So on one hand, you had slaves who rose up. On the other hand, you had free people of color getting involved, too. You had it across very many levels of society. And in the end, I think that's what helped make it so successful, is that it cut across certain things, free and slave, light skin, dark skin. You know, the leadership, for instance, Toussaint Louverture, the most famous, he was a former slave.
Did the rise of the United States and the industrial might of the United States erase the history of the Caribbean? Did it displace the sense of the Caribbean's leadership in dealing with being the sort of the leader of the New World? So much in 20th century history of the United States versus the Caribbean is all about a kind of neocolonialism and the revolution in Nicaragua, the banana republics, all that sort of thing.
You know, the U.S. has had a heavy hand, certainly during the Cold War, in dealing with the Caribbean. And culturally, I think it's been hard to avoid America's influence. But what I think has come out of this is that America doesn't see its relationship with its own history to the Caribbean's history and to the Caribbean struggle. And I feel like there's this disconnect between the U.S. thinking, oh, those are some islands, where people in the Caribbean and across the islands, it's very diasporic. There's lots of family members here, and they see a much more fluid, relationship.
How did the jet age change the relationship between
the people of North America and the people of the Caribbean. You suddenly had places that were much more accessible than had ever been in the past.
There became a realization on one hand that tourism was a way to raise money, and pressure from international organizations on the other, like the IMF, to develop that economy at the expense of more traditional ones like fishing or agriculture. All is kind of developing as the jet age makes travel cheaper. And in the 40s and 50s, you know, the Caribbean was kind of an exotic hideaway for the wealthy, too.
Mm-hmm. And the wealthy's money.
Yes. You know, these resorts were built. They were all inclusive. And all of a sudden, people from here and from Britain and other parts of Europe could come to the Caribbean and kind of enjoy that, what they thought was kind of the five-star lifestyle. And I think that kind of still persists to this day. Mm-hmm. But it made it easier to come and go. But it also made it easier to immigrate and leave, too.
If you include Mexico and, you know, the rise of South America as part of the sort of momentum of the Spanish-speaking people in this hemisphere, the 21st century is really going to be defined by the Spanish-speaking rise in the Caribbean and elsewhere. And really, we're seeing a decline in the English-speaking power and politics in North America. And so your doctorate is sort of well-timed, it would seem.
Yes, I mean, I think, you know, the Spanish-speaking people of the whole hemisphere, you know, the 21st century is going to be a very busy one, I think, for them in the U.S. And also what's interesting is there's such an enormous diversity. People from the Caribbean, you know, have long been in New York, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, but now you're seeing people move elsewhere. You know, I write about creolization in the book, and it would be nice if the U.S. kind of saw itself as a bit more of a creolized place. Like, people come from all these places, we come together, we melt, we, you know. I mean, I think New Orleans is probably the one place that represents that in the U.S., you know, this kind of merging of different things. And seeing the Caribbean as part of that story and the contribution from people from Jamaica or from Cuba, or and what that means to the bigger picture of U.S. history and U.S. contemporary culture as well. That we accept that people's backgrounds can be complicated and diverse and bring many influences.
So in your exploration of the Caribbean, do you have a preference for baseball or cricket?
Because I grew up in the U.S., I'm going to have to say baseball. But I am quite fond of cricket.
And they're very popular in both.
There's a lot of love there for bat and ball sports.
A lot of love in this book for the Caribbean empires. Crossroads, the history of the Caribbean from the Columbus to the present day. Kerry Gibson, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem solving, with brain games to calculate baseline scores and build a personalized brain training program. Performance can be compared to global averages. Learn more at Lumosity.com.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.